Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Brian Trenchard Smith's 1983 film, BMX Bandits. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, that's a lovely accent. New Jersey?
I wish I could do an awesome Australian accent because that was prominently featured in BMX Bandits, and I really enjoyed that.
Oh, so. Really wish we could have had Billy Bryan back on.
Billy Bryan? Do you mean Brian Brown, the star of FX?
Yeah, Billy Bryan Brown. I sometimes don't use all three of his names.
Okay.
He's like John Cougar.
Right. All right. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game. Transition on into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I have the character name game for you this week, and this is one of my favorites. So I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but we'll come back and guess, as always, near the end of the episode. So the character's name is Tony Perkis. Tony Perkis. So be thinking about that one. And let's go ahead and move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, concerts, books, comics, movies, whatever. So, Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
Well, this week, I've mentioned this show before, The Clone Wars, Star Wars The Clone Wars, on Cartoon Network.
Yep.
But a new realization here. If you go to StarWars.com to watch it, no commercials, all the way straight through. You can watch a lot of episodes. Pretty crisp quality. Mm. And, you know, it's got like a Band of Brothers feel to it, although I've never seen Band of Brothers. I assume that's what it's like. you know, a bunch of guys fighting a war. And it's kind of cool, those episodes that don't have like a lot of major characters in it. And they kind of focus on minor characters that you kind of know. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, check, you know, if you don't, if your DVR is all full up, you know, recording like The Dish or that, you know, what's her name's fashion show on E.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her name. She was the voice of Dot in Spaceballs, and her name is Alyssa. Is her daughter's name Joan Rivers?
Yeah.
And so yeah, check it out. Next on my list is Night of the Comet, which I said I was going to watch and then write a review on to finish out Shocktober Fest Scarathon.
Mm-hmm.
Started up, it was a Christmas movie, like it was happening at Christmas time, so I was like, okay, F this, I'm not going to watch Night of the Comet until Christmas, and then, so I was like, okay, I'll watch Puppet Master instead.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I watched the first 5 minutes of that, realizing that I didn't want to waste my time, so I turned it off, gave it a one, I think, and went about my way. So, you know, Night of the Comet, I don't know if that's going to be good or not, but I didn't watch it for Scarathon. But okay. Puppet Master, I'm not going to watch that. So,
all right.
I'm not your prank monkey. And finally, Ben, you got an email from them. Phoenix Online Studios coming out with a new project today. Sunday is the release of King's Quest Silver Lining Part 4, I think.
Okay.
And they just recently announced a new project with Jane Jensen. They're buddies over there. That's why I'm kind of pimping their stuff.
Yeah, buddies of yours.
Buddies of mine and you. Sure, I'll bring in on that. And Jane Jensen wrote King's Quest VI, which is my all-time favorite video game, computer game of all time.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I thought it was your favorite King's Quest game. I wasn't aware it held such a high standard of all time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
So, yeah, go check them out. I think they can be found at postudios.com. But if you put – I might be wrong, so just type in something into Google and find them from there.
Okay.
Do it on your own, buddy.
And you want to plug your interview that you did with them?
Yeah, I could definitely. I interviewed them, except for the horrible sign-off phrase that I did, which I regret to this day, that I just completely effed it up. That's an After Midnight. So if you want to go into the podcast archives, I think it's episode 1 of the After Midnight series,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to be bringing back soon, I think.
Yes.
Before the end of the year. So, yeah, you can go check that out, kind of learn about the project as a whole, and then that'll have all the websites and stuff on it as well.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, the After Midnight series, for those of you who are unaware, is just kind of an ancillary attachment, if you will, to the podcast, in which we do random interviews with people or just like talk about things that are, you know, on our minds, just kind of, you know, incoherent ramblings.
Yeah, there's no structure. Some say it's like a malignant attachment to the mother show. Yeah. But, you know, other people like it. I think we're doing a couple projects with After Midnight in the near future.
Yeah, we got some things.
I have to talk Ben into doing, so.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be awesome.
Cool.
Capital A-W.
Nice. So, a couple things that I wanted to mention.
Wait, I'm not done.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm done.
Oh, man.
Gotcha.
Such a trickster. All right, so it's funny that you mentioned that you started watching a movie and then didn't finish it, because I did the same thing. The movie that I... What's that?
BMX Bandits.
No, we'll get to that. The movie that I began and did not finish is a 1991 musical romance by the name of Cool as Ice, and it stars Vanilla Ice in his first starring role.
I'm liking it.
It's basically a retelling of Rebel Without a Cause, but with Vanilla Ice as a motorcycle-riding bad boy rapper who meets this girl who's like a super smart honor student, and her dad is in witness protection. And it is so terrible. I was watching this while I was at work. It's available for free on Hulu right now, so anybody who's interested in Vanilla Ice... and who happens to be also listening to this podcast, which I can't imagine is a ton of crossover there, with the exception maybe of our friend Zach Bartlett.
Big Red.
Should check out Cool as Ice, because, like, actually, I think everybody who's listening to this maybe should watch, like, just the first 10 minutes or something, just to see what I'm talking about, because this
just
movie...
to see what kind of movie we won't get through.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, this movie...
We watch terrible movies, but we can't get through this one.
Just to see that Universal, a well-known movie studio, put millions of dollars into the production of this and distributed it, and this movie was in theaters. Like, it's just mind-blowing to me, because it's Vanilla Ice exactly as you would imagine Vanilla Ice always is. Like, he's wearing the most hideous clothing, and he's got, like, shapes carved into his haircut, and he's one of the worst actors. He won a Razzie that year for worst actor. It is just phenomenally bad. So one of the most shocking aspects of this to me was that there's a guy named, I believe his name is pronounced Yanis. I could be wrong about that, so forgive the mispronunciation if there is one. Yanis Kaminsky, who is the director of photography on this movie. This guy is a multi-Academy Award-winning cinematographer who has shot movies like... Schindler's List, The Lost World, Saving Private Ryan, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, War of the Worlds, Funny People, the upcoming Tintin. This dude works with Spielberg a lot, and somehow he also was the director of photography on Cool as Ice, which is just mind-blowing. So, I just was...
Maybe Vanilla Ice gets killed off in like the first 10 minutes and you just didn't get to that part.
No, I got it.
And then the rest of the movie is just heartwarmingly awesome.
Yeah, where you watched only the first 5 or 10 minutes of Puppet Master, I actually watched like the first 40 of Cool as Ice.
Oh, okay.
And then turned it off. Just because
I went pretty far in.
I didn't have anything else better to do at the time, so I was just like, I'm gonna watch this. And then when I had to leave work, I was like, there's no way I'm going home and finishing this movie. So I figured it was worth bringing up. Oh, also, the poster is fantastic, and the catchphrase on it is, "When a girl has a heart of stone, there's only one way to melt it: just add ice." So.
That no, you can't melt stone with ice.
That
like,
is
that's a chemist's nightmare.
Yeah, that there's
the only way to turn lead into gold, add ice. Like, it's physically impossible.
There's got to be a lot of ice to melt a stone.
Yeah, like, you got to freeze the rock and maybe, like, they should have been, like, hammer it. I don't know.
Yeah. MC like, Hammer should have started. Ice.
That's something.
Yeah. MC Hammer should have starred in this movie, but.
You couldn't touch it, though.
Oh, nice. Okay. So, yeah, that's awful. And, of course, the movie opens with a song performed in, like, a damp club by Vanilla Ice. So yeah, watch the first 10 minutes if you want to see something that's just kind of abysmally and maybe humorously terrible. So
the crappy bar in Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah, kind of, or like that one bar where the old man walks in and dispatches a bunch of kids. And
I think Vanilla Ice was one of the guys that Van Damme attacks in the bookend segments of the quest. I don't know if you remember that scene, but I'm pretty sure he asked, one of those guys, you know, to chill or something.
Right. Yeah. Some sort of one-liner. We'll have to go back and examine that scene a little bit more closely from the classic Van Damme film, The Quest. But yeah, so moving on into the next thing I wanted to mention. There's a company or a website, I'm not really sure. I mean, I know it's a website. It's called iam8bit.com. I'm not sure exactly like what the extent of this is, whether it's like a full-blown corporation or what. But anyway, this iam8bit held this, or is currently holding, I should say, an art show here in Los Angeles with movie and TV-themed art pieces made entirely out of Red Vine's licorice, which is pretty fascinating. I went and took a bunch of pictures of this stuff and wrote up the little piece and posted all of them at geektyrant.com. So I'll put the link to that article in the show notes here so you guys can check that out, or just go to Geek Tyrant and just type in search for licorice and I'm sure you'll find it. So they've got pictures of Michael C. Hall from Dexter. What else? A Willy Wonka, Harry Potter, E.T. There's a picture of Elizabeth Berkley from Showgirls licking a stripper pole made entirely out of licorice as well. So this
you
guy,
mean Jesse Spano.
Yeah. Okay. There's Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps, which features multiple incarnations of Eddie Murphy and also Janet Jackson. There's a Kim Kardashian one for some reason, Freddy Krueger, Charlie Chaplin, you know, it's like, yeah, it really runs the gamut. The guy who, creates this art, I think his name is, Jason Messier, M-E-C-I-E-R, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And, this stuff, like, is pretty impressive, I'll give him that. It's really weird and totally inspired by a bunch of random things, obviously. I mean, you've got Kim Kardashian right next to freaking Charlie Chaplin. It's like, where else are you ever going to see something like that? But
there's some connection there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They both have mustaches.
So anyway, you can go to iam8bit.com and check out some more information there. Or if you happen to be in Los Angeles, you can check out the show for yourself. It's free and open to the public. You just walk in and they had Red Vines girls instead of cigarette girls like they used to have at old-timey clubs and stuff, you know, where they would have like girls walking around with like carts out in front of them, kind of like in that NBC show, The Playboy Club, that we talked about a few weeks back, maybe a month or so ago. Instead of passing out cigarettes, it was just Red Vines, and they were just asking if people wanted them. So I don't know, if you're in the mood for some free Red Vines and want to check out some really cool and bizarre art, then check that out. It's at the iam8bit store or gallery in Los Angeles.
Maybe the licorice had some nicotine in it, so they were just as addicting as cigarettes.
Possibly.
Interesting.
I'm not a fan of the taste of licorice, so I don't know if there's any sort of addictive qualities to
you're not a fan of Twizzler, the knockoff of Twizzler?
No, definitely not. And I think Red Vines itself is a knockoff of Twizzlers, so it's sure they are. Yeah. But anyway.
And I remember when Twizzler came out with like those really thick ropes of Twizzlers, and like each string was like roped around, and so you had like 9 strings to peel off.
Wow.
Man, yeah. I would crawl up the walls.
That loaded with sugar, huh?
Yeah. They nice. Say it's low calorie though, so whatever. I'll still down a bag every once in a while. Like right. $2 in the vending machine though. It's a ripoff.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. A good pound of licorice, though.
So the only other stuff that I've been watching has been a couple movies for the AFI Film Festival that's also going on in Hollywood. And I'm not really going to talk about those right now just because I want to do kind of a wrap-up as soon as it's done. The festival ends this Thursday, so next week on the show I'll talk about like all the movies that I saw there and just kind of run them down for everybody real quick. So,
is there a way to keep up your exposure to AFI somewhere?
You can go to geektyrant.com. That's where I'm posting all my reviews of it. And just search for, you know, AFI Film Fest 2011 or something along those lines. And I'm also posting those reviews at notjustnewmovies.com so people can find them there. I think depending on how many movies I get to see there, that'll depend on whether, Tyler, I ask you to create some sort of banner or like badass, you know, graphic that points people to the all of this work. So...
no problem, pal.
Coming up in the next few days, people can we'll discover whether or not that actually came to fruition. So, anyway, that's all I've got. So let's go ahead and move on into our review of BMX Bandits.
BMX Bandits. They're wild in the streets, in a high-flying ride to adventure. It's thrills and spills, fast and furious fun. It's a real blast.
All right, so BMX Bandits came out in 1983. This is an Australian, Wikipedia calls it an Australian children's adventure film, featuring one of Nicole Kidman's earliest performances. So, Tyler, what did you think about BMX Bandits?
Ben, sorry to have to break this to you, but this movie's super lame, totally gnarly in the negative sense of the word.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like to ride bikes too, but the whole movie doesn't have to be bike riding footage. So, you know, it was for kids. Like one of the categories that Netflix says, it's like movies for kids 10 to 12, movies for kids from 13 to 15. And I was like, okay, well, I watched The Wizard like that, but yeah, it wasn't anything like The Wizard.
So
thumbs down, basically.
Thumbs down. Wow, I'm going to give this one a thumbs up.
Oh. Gosh.
I know. I'm sorry. It's like
Ben.
I don't know why I like the movie so much. I think because you said, you know, the whole movie doesn't have to be BMX bikes or whatever, and that's kind of true. It's like almost the entire movie is one extended chase sequence. And I kind of love it for that. It's like, there's barely a story there. It's like the most basic type of thing that you can come up with. And it really doesn't make much sense from, especially from the villain's standpoint. But it's about these like two guys who just cruise around Australia on these badass BMX bikes. And you have to remember, this was 1983. So this must have been really, really cool for kids to watch back then before... you know, the rise of skateboarding and all that stuff really, you know, kind of blew up in the whole Tony Hawk movement and all that stuff. So this must have been like, I can imagine this movie being my favorite film of all time when I was 10 or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. What didn't you like about it?
You know, the kids were, you know, unnecessarily quippy with their dialogue. I don't talk like that. Okay. The villains were ineffective at best.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, I like the surprise guest star of Freddie Mercury as one of the bad guys, but you know, that can only take the movie so far. I mean, are you serious? There isn't one store that sells walkie-talkies in Australia. You have to smuggle them in from the United States, like 6,000-7,000 miles away. You don't have walkie-talkie capabilities there.
Right.
And the whole bank robbery. I mean, not the first one, the other one that they were going to do, mm-hmm. where they talk about what they're going to do and then mm-hmm. never do it, because the whole job depends on the existence of these walkie-talkies. Like, I think, I mean, I understand it was a BMX movie, and like the end, every single kid on the continent that has a bike follows them, for, you know, because they all have walkie-talkies. I guess there were 1,000 in that little box. It just, I mean, maybe it was because it was early morning and I just did not feel like welcoming this film into my arms as far as, and I mean, I never saw it as a kid, so there's no nostalgia factor that affects me like The Wizard did.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to say. It was from Australia, so like they were saying like meters and stuff, and I'm like, what? Who does that? And I mean, it's kind of easy where everyone, you know, I wish I could ride my bike along the beach every day and then, you know, have like one cop in the entire city that hassles you, and the cop department's just like, hey, you kids, get off this channel, and like have no technology whatsoever how to track them down. Like, these kids could be murdered at any point.
It's the early 80s, though.
And and like, you know, Nicole Kidman, you're like, okay, maybe she'll be hot in this. And it's like, no, she's not. She's like 14. So, yeah, that's pretty much all the reasons that have been laid out as to why, you know,
yeah.
It was a cool bike movie, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, I,
but it was, I, no, yeah. Lords of Dogtown, although that was kind of overdramatic. There should have been more skateboarding in that, but
right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's important, I think, for movies like that to kind of strike that balance, and Lords of Dogtown is a good example of where I agree with you. I think it did get a little bit too heavy, and this movie goes on the other end of the spectrum where there's, like, you know, very little consequence to anything at all, so it just makes it kind of awesome because the whole thing is just these kids, you know, it kind of brings you back to a time, like, you know, like you were saying. You don't have that same kind of nostalgia factor that you did for The Wizard because you didn't grow up, you know, obsessed with BMX culture or whatever.
In the early 80s in Australia, right?
Yeah. But but for me, there is a little bit of a nostalgia factor, even though I didn't ever, I don't think I've ever really ridden a BMX bike before, but just like...
Really?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe once when I was a kid.
Would you jump up on a 10 gear right away?
Yeah, I think I was straight mountain bikes through
nice.
The flatlands of Florida when I was growing up.
I remember when I got my bike, I was like, I don't know, 3, 4, and I couldn't ride it. And I think it was a BMX. I think I had 2 BMX. One was a blue one, one was a red one.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was like 6, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to learn how to ride my bike, because 2 years had gone by, and I still didn't know how to ride a bike. So like propped it up in the curb, and I got on it, and then I started riding, and then that one got destroyed. I got too big for that one. And then I got like the one that they had in the movie, where it had like the handlebar with the foam
mm-hmm.
in between the handles and like the foam tube in the middle, and then like it was only one gear. It wasn't like they had handlebars on the handles or brakes on the handles. You had to like go backwards to brake, so you could do those really sweet skids in the road. But it was more out of necessity than I didn't have like pictures of bikes up in my room or anything.
Right.
I was just like, yeah, that's my bike.
Yeah. No, I had one of those.
I had places to go, Ben. I had places to be. I was a very important 5-year-old.
I had one of those that you described as well. I don't know. I think I was more of like just a Huffy bike or something. I don't know if that was an actual like BMX. Like,
may not have been name brand, but it might have been the same.
But anyway, yeah, I kind of have a little bit of that nostalgia factor because even though I didn't grow up like riding, you know, specifically BMXs or anything, I did ride my bike a lot as a kid, and you know, it kind of just reminds you of that freedom that you had, and like the whole thing about, you know, being a kid, you don't have to worry about anything. Like, there's no pressure on you to do anything, and a lot of that stuff kind of comes through in this movie. Like, the color palette here is super bright. I mean, it's like bubblegum pop colors, candy red, really bright blue, and I don't know, it just seems like this really kind of vibrant world. And they, you know, like you said, they live right on the beach, so they're constantly just like cruising through the town seemingly without a care in the world. I don't know, a lot of that stuff just I found really charming, and it did kind of bring me back to a time when you don't have to worry about paying bills and stuff like that. So
definitely.
On that level, I liked it. Also, there's just so many ridiculous things that happen in it, and I kind of, you know, a lot of it is slapstick childish humor, but I liked it, and I'm surprised that you didn't, because I feel like a lot of this stuff, maybe if you had seen it on a different day or something, you probably would have liked a lot of it. Because I mean,
it's right up my alley.
There's this bank robber thing where these guys wear pig masks and break into a bank, and at one point the guy, as he's robbing someone, yells, "You're staring death in the face," and he's wearing a huge pig mask. I mean, there's so much comedy in that. It's like a Point Break predecessor, you know, like with the whole ex-presidents and stuff. This was like almost 10 years before Catherine Bigelow got her thing going there. But there's this scene like right after the bank robbery where the guys are just kind of cruising. PJ and what is his name? Goose, right? Yeah. Are kind of cruising through the town or whatever, and there's this girl, and they like smack her on the ass as they drive by, and she thinks that some creep sitting next to her did it, and then they like knock this blow up doll into a priest's face, like just like so many little things like that that are just, you know, brushed on but never explored in any way, that I don't know, I thought were little funny touches along the way. I don't know. For some reason, I was in a good mood or something when I was watching this. But the bad guys are just like some of the most hapless henchmen I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, there is like quite literally a 30-minute chase scene.
Quite literally.
Through a mall and a warehouse. Like, the warehouse might have been my favorite.
It's half the movie, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And that's why I like it. Just for that reason. Like, they go down freaking water slides with BMX bikes, and and then
total damage to the slide, by the way. Nobody, like, they didn't check them or anything to make sure that the kids were safe going down the slides. Like, just bikes, helmets, clothes, everything went down those slides.
Yeah. So
no adults.
And they get out, and the chase continues after that.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many sequences in this movie, like segments of this chase where the kids are trying to get away from these guys who are after these walkie-talkies that you mentioned, and the kids will like cut down a hill or something, like this grassy embankment, and like come out on another street or something like that, and then somehow the guys who are chasing them up on the top of the hill in a vehicle, like a full car, are also instantly right behind them again, with no explanation as to the geography or like how they got to where they are. And it doesn't matter, because it's all serving the purpose of just this really long chase sequence with this really 80s synthesized ridiculous music going on in the background that just seems to like pop up over and over, and it's like the same 12 notes just played on repeat, you know, for the entire chase sequence. So
don't even get me started on the music, Ben P. Tell you right now.
There's like comedic radio miscommunications where they're talking and like the cops get involved, but also for some reason the police and the construction workers are operating on the same wavelength, even though the cops
there's only one channel in all of Australia.
The cops they make it a point to say like this is illegal for anybody else aside from the police to be operating on this frequency, except for apparently these construction workers who are like, "All right, George, take it down when I say the word now." And then, like, you know, of course, one of the bad guys yells "now" into a radio, and then they drop a freaking, steel beam on a car, and it blows up, where they spent like half the budget on a huge 40, story explosion or something.
Not only did it destroy the car, and a second went by, a couple seconds, and then it exploded. The gas tank was just like, "Welp."
Ready, guys? 3, 2, 1, now. All right.
I'm glad no one went up to, like, you know, explain or try to get it off right away, because they would have died.
Yeah, and that's another reason, like, there's no consequence to anything. Like, once the kids finally get captured and brought in by the cops at the end, the police officer is just like, "All right, you guys," I'm paraphrasing here, but he's basically like, "You guys have caused millions of dollars worth of damage to our city, and I'm just gonna let you go. And also, I'm gonna give you reward money for tracking down these guys. So
promise not to do it again, right?" Yeah. They went and did it again. We'll still give him the money.
Well, he says, he seems to imply that the reward money would go toward paying for all of the damage that they've caused, and then they just get the reward money and build their BMX racing track at the end. So
start a bureaucracy of, races and trophies and all this stuff. I thought for sure Nicole Kidman was going to die at that one point, though.
Oh, really?
This is where the movie's going to take a really dark turn.
Oh.
She's going to be, stabbed in the trachea and, and then, they'll hear on the other side of the radio just, some gurgling or something.
But wow. Yeah. That wasn't the case. That would definitely take it over to another level. But, yeah, I mean, this movie, it's just so, like I said, it's got this kind of bubblegum candy type of pop to it where it's like nothing bad is ever going to happen. No consequences are ever going to matter to these kids. Sure. So I don't know. There's a long sequence that takes place in a cemetery that I thought was a little out of place where it was kind of delved into a little bit more of not a horror movie setup by any means, but just really ridiculous. Again, this whole thing makes no sense. The guys, the bank robbers follow the kids into the cemetery at night, and they go in there and one of them's like, no man, I'm not gonna wear my pig mask in a cemetery, but he'll wear a goblin mask in there.
Yeah,
which it's like, what,
a la Troll 2,
right? It's like, what what are these guys, what is this guy's moral code? I don't understand. He won't do the pig, but he will do a goblin. I don't get it.
Right, well, it's kind of illegal, or it's kind of sacrilegious to wear a mask in a cemetery. Have you ever heard that?
I've never heard that specifically, but
yeah, I'm making that up.
Okay.
Did you notice that Nicole Kidman, when she was doing all her stunts on her bike, was clearly just a tall man?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yep. Good. Totally. Wearing a frizzy frizzy wig.
Totally a dude. Yeah, not even close to being a woman.
Not that we're saying women can't ride a bike. but clearly in this movie, they were not trying to support the fact that women can ride bikes. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah,
they,
I don't know.
At the end, they're like, the stunt bicyclist, three guys. And I was like, Oh, come on. It blew the magic away.
Yeah. It's so,
she's blatant. Clearly bicycling in this race right now. And you want to tell me that's a stunt rider? Okay. Okay. All right.
They just assume that kids can't read, I think, when they put that early on in the credits. Instead of slipping that in at the end to preserve the magic, they're like, right up front, directed by, oh yeah, this is also a woman. So, or not a woman, this is a man riding the bikes. But
so did this movie even get to the U.S. Theatrically, or did it just come over eventually?
I'm not sure. I think it must have come
movie
a little
so
bit.
Much. Do some research, man.
It must have come a little bit later, because it just says that it grossed $125,000 at the box office in Australia, which I have no idea if that's a lot for that time, but it doesn't sound like a lot. So
yeah, those British pounds or whatever they use over there.
Yeah, I'm sure this.
I don't even know if they use the euro.
I love how ignorant we are of other cultures.
Was it rubles or something? I'll use some rubles, maybe just some pieces of mulch. Hi, give me a Faustus. Here's 6 pebbles. Nice, mate.
Oh, man.
I know a lot about cultures. I just don't know a lot about Australia.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's a country continent. How egotistical do you have to be?
Yeah.
Come on, I'm just kidding.
No offense to our Australian listeners.
We probably do have Australian listeners, and they're going to love this episode, and we just ride them hard about their culture. What's up with Crocodile Dundee, huh? When's he coming back?
Oh, man. I would be so embarrassed about Crocodile Dundee if I was an Australian, a native Australian. But
how do we compare Nicole Kidman's rise from BMX Bandits to her penultimate performance in Batman Forever?
I mean, it's nowhere near as good, obviously, because we've previously established that she should win every acting award ever for her performance in Batman Forever, and that's
in every year following the existence of Batman Forever. Like, the cast of Batman Forever should win the Oscars every year, even though the movies come out 16 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. They should, it's just, they should have the entire Academy Awards ceremony and then just retroactively award Batman Forever every award for every category.
Right. Well, we also had the idea of remaking the film every year, scene for scene, with the same actors and actresses. Like, same script, same everything. You know, freaking, what's his name, Joel Schumacher.
Yep.
Can do all that stuff. Not Jerry Bruckheimer, as previously mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't think he had anything to do with that film at all.
No, he didn't.
Although I 90% of the time claim he did. But I mean, if you compare BMX Bandits to Batman Forever, Ben, what do you have to say?
I mean, it's hard to compare anything to Batman Forever because it's just so far and away better than anything else. But BMX has
a Gotham accent, like she picks up a Gotham accent that doesn't really tie in with her, you know, slack-jawed Australian accent.
I don't know. To be completely real, I thought Nicole Kidman was okay in this movie. Like, you know, she if you're looking for her to be hot, yeah, you're looking the wrong place because she was like whatever 15 or 16 or something. So
why was she working at a grocery store though? That means she's at least 16.
Yeah, I guess so.
She can't drive. She's only got a bike.
Yeah, she's working hard for the money so she can buy her own bike, man. She's you know. Bringing herself up from the bootstraps or whatever that phrase is.
Pulling yourself up.
Yeah, that, yeah. So, I don't know. I thought she was all right.
Pirates of the Caribbean at Jerry Bruckheimer production. Bring it all back.
Bootstrap Bill. So, there's one, actually two things that I wanted to mention before we wrap up this conversation. One, I thought it was hilarious that these the ridiculous henchmen that are chasing them around for the whole time, one of the guys actually literally punches through the word fun in a sign, and I was like, man, the symbolism here, it's so so subtle. I don't know what they're doing, but
yeah, he is not having fun at this point.
Yeah.
And he's then, on a 35-minute chase with kids on bikes.
And okay,
real time, Ben.
Real time, yeah, God knows how many hours they spent filming the actual thing. But but yeah, okay, so that's a good point. Like, they go into this warehouse right during this chase sequence, and the guy who's driving is just doing donuts in a huge empty warehouse, and the kids are just whizzing by at random angles on their bikes, like never being hit or anything, just like riding in circles around this massive warehouse. And there's a guy driving the vehicle, and then there's his sidekick who's just wildly flopping around out through the sunroof, just like spinning his head around to look at the kids and kind of pointing in their general direction. And so this goes on for, I don't know, I'd say like a full 2 or 2.5 minutes of screen time of just random shots of all this stuff kind of montaged together while this cheesy 80s synth music goes on. And then the kids just ride out the front door, and the guys just ride out after them, and then they continue the chase from there. So that entire little set piece was totally not relevant to anything. Like, there's no reason for that to have existed, and that's kind of why I like this movie.
Well, there was the one part where they got in there and he was like, there's no way they can find us here, and then they bust through the wall in the car, and then the donuts and everything ensues. So they needed a way to work that joke into the movie, so obviously 3 minutes of donuts is exactly what happened.
That's what they get for trying.
We need to justify this joke. Okay. We'll have them run around. Like, anytime, I don't think they had a gun or anything. They could have just, like, run over the kids. I mean, they could have interrogated them with, like, broken legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or shot them, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anything. I don't know. I'm taking it too seriously.
Taking a crowbar out of the trunk and just hit them with it as they were driving past. Anything. Yeah, totally.
Like, shoot the two friends, then interrogate the last one.
Yeah, anything.
That's the way to do it. If you want to get some information,
yeah, I mean, if this was like a Scorsese movie or something, these guys would be
brutal. One of them would be dead in a bulldozer, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, totally. So,
and then Nicole Kidman comes up in the elevator.
Yeah. Opens up
too much.
The door.
I'm giving too much away. Giving too much away.
So the last thing that I wanted to mention was the giant thing that you also brought up in the beginning, where like all the kids show up, like this kind of climactic.
Every kid from Australia. Right.
Yeah, the climactic sequence that reminded me a lot of Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't know if you remember that movie at all, but there's a
one
scene
with Ludacris, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely my favorite one.
There's a scene where I think Tyrese and Paul Walker are trying to escape a police helicopter, so they drive into this warehouse, and then it's revealed that they've gotten like everyone in the city of Miami who has a tricked out car to be waiting in this warehouse. So then everyone drives out at the same time, so the police have no idea where these guys are.
Right.
So that just kind of like the imagery of BMX bandits, you know, brought that back for me a little bit, because there's just so many freaking kids cruising around. And I also love the fact that they use bags of flour as ammo. Right.
Instead of like slingshots or something effective.
Yeah, they're like, you've got your ammo, and he hurls a bag of flour. What is that going to do to anyone?
Yeah.
I understand.
Well, first of all, he throws it like somewhere. Like,
yeah.
Beach goer is going to be hit with a bag of flour for no reason down that cliff wherever he threw it. Bag of flour, you know, it creates like a smoke screen, I guess, where the bad guys can't see, and perhaps if it's moist out, it may start to dough.
I guess,
you know, I'm not an Australian kid. Maybe there's some type of thing with the weather down there where flour is like acidic because of the Australian weather. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah. Well, speaking of chemical reactions, like at the end of the movie, they go into this like foam fertilizer pit.
Oh, yeah.
And just knock it over. And Yakety Sax might as well have been playing.
It was the Australian version where they play Yakety Sax backwards, I think.
Yeah, that's
because of the toilets, they spin they spin in reverse, so they were like, all right, Yakety Sax backwards.
I might try to find Yakety Sax and play it backwards just to see what that sounds like for a second. But
well, I mean, like it's a well established institution of, you know, the foam industry down there. Like, you know, sometimes it's green technology, sometimes it's you know, communications down there in Australia. You know, they're surrounded by sand, they're surrounded by salt water. You know, why not create foam and just like make sidewalks out of foam? And it's brilliant, really, because the foam eventually just disappears and like turns to like water and then mud, and then eventually it dries up. I mean, that might take a couple weeks. You got a good couple weeks of sidewalk usage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I was actually
the foam industry there.
Our former co-host Pat was like sitting in on the last part of this movie and saw this whole thing, and I was like, "What is that, foam fertilizer? Is that a thing? I've never heard of that." And he's like, "Yeah, it's probably just really unsafe, and they discovered that, you know, a couple years after, since this was in the early '80s. Like, I don't think they use that anymore." So,
fertilizer?
Yeah, foam fertilizer. That's what it was.
Mm.
So, yeah, your whole
ineffective.
Your whole thing about, you know, it disappearing and kind of melting into the mud makes sense, I guess.
I thought it was just straight foam.
Well, that would be even more ridiculous if there were guys just like sitting there in a foam truck. But
that's what it was. It was a foam, and like everybody was in it. So you're telling me everyone was just inhaling pesticide?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so
I thought for sure they were like just outline where the sidewalk was going to go with the foam.
Right. No, it was.
I thought
definitely
foam was the first step, then cement or something like that.
No, it was just it was fertilizer. But I also like the idea that because everyone was inhaling pesticide, that maybe the remainder of the movie is just like a drug induced haze that didn't actually exist.
Yeah. Like at the end of the race, they all wake up in hospital beds, and like the nurse is like, "We lost them," and then like they pull a sheet over Nicole Kidman's face.
Right. Yeah.
And then the bat signal goes up in the background.
There's the darkness that you were talking about that this movie.
Yeah,
needed.
I knew she was gonna die.
So,
ages 10 to 13, really? Netflix, come on.
And it kind of, you know, it did have an abrupt ending, so maybe that was the subtext there. That this whole.
Did you know?
Go ahead.
I said, did you notice it was called the manly BMX track because all the stunts were done by men? As if women could ride bikes.
I think manly is a region of Australia, but yes, I did notice that.
I don't think so, Ben.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know if you're
There's
being
a
serious.
There's a section of Australia called manly.
I don't know if you're being serious right now, but I'm pretty sure there is.
It's west of Dudley. And south of Curly.
Right.
Curly, Australia. Where do you think the fries come from?
Well, okay, so let's open it up to any Australian listeners that we may have. Let us know what you think about BMX Bandits. Is this like a national treasure in your culture? We're curious. We don't know where this stands in the Australian zeitgeist these days. So let us know. Send us an email. That would be great. So, Tyler, you want to do some just concluding thoughts, I guess, on BMX Bandits?
I had fun talking about this movie. If you like bikes and you're eight, check this out. But, you know, maybe I did watch it on a bad day, so maybe I'll watch it again in like 20 years, see how it stands up, and hopefully I'll be in a better mood.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I thought it had a lot of really ridiculous stuff in it, and it's all, you know, very breezy and not inconsequential in every single conceivable way. So if you're looking for, you know, some fun and a decent movie about kids riding around on bikes through Australia all day, check it out. But
it's breezy, it's manly, it's all sorts of things. It's foamy, watery.
So many adjectives there. But do you want to rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Yeah, sure. Lever pull now. Looks like Sean Connery's coming back to the show, Ben. Is this his third time on the show?
I think so, yeah.
Not physically, of course, but spiritually.
Yeah, Outland, Zardoz, and now
Dragonheart.
Dragonheart, okay.
Yeah, man. Zardoz meets Outland meets Dragonheart.
Okay.
So Sean Connery may be coming in for a stay this coming week.
Coming in
on my couch.
Leaving us a voicemail, as usual.
No, he's actually going to be here.
Okay.
I don't know if he'll be on the show. I don't know if he'll be like, I think he's a little stage, he gets some stage fright.
Yeah, he's retired now, so.
Yeah, he doesn't do Hollywood, and I try to convince him that the podcast isn't really Hollywood, but he knows that you live in Hollywood, so he's boycotted appearing on the show. But he will be here in my apartment while we record.
Just wandering around through the background,
yeah,
scoffing at random comments that you make about the movie.
Exactly. Possibly backhanding me whenever I say something out of line.
Yeah, because as long as you keep the open hand, it's okay.
Yeah, and I always want to have the last word, but then he gives me the last word, so there's nothing I can return with.
Oh, man. If listeners
there's no way you can disprove that, listeners, because you can't see what's going on in my apartment at this time. So,
also, I mean, if anybody's wondering what we're talking about, there's this notorious video on YouTube of Sean Connery being interviewed by Barbara Walters where he talks about how it's acceptable to slap a woman with an open hand instead of a closed fist. So check that out if you've never seen that before.
Yeah, she's like, 20 years ago I interviewed you and you said you condone beating your wife. Like, do you still follow that statement? He's like, oh, absolutely.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. That's terrible. But,
no, it's pretty funny. Not the violence against women, of course, but the gall that Barbara Walters had to even ask 20 years later.
I was not expecting you, man. You got me on that one. I thought for sure that was going to be the gall that Connery has, but the gall Walters has to ask the question. Oh, man. Okay. Well, if you guys, you can send us an email, let us know what your thoughts are on, you know, open hand versus closed fist or BMX Bandits or Dragonheart or anything else that we've ever talked about.
Manly, if that even exists.
Yeah. If you happen to live in Manly, Australia, let us know. Yeah. This is a real place.
You know what? We're doing an After Midnight where we'll explore the culture of Australia, and we're actually going to use this show to educate ourselves.
Okay. I like it.
Look forward to it. There's going to be a lot of Men at Work music. There's going to be a whole lot of kangaroo jokes.
And an interview with Paul Hogan.
An interview. And Brian Bill. Brian Billy Brownstone.
All right. Well, in any case, you guys can shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Like I said, you know, talk to us about pretty much anything and we'll read it aloud on the air. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Do us a favor, leave us a review. Take like 5 seconds and do that. It helps our visibility and stuff, and we want to try to take this thing to the next level, and we need your help doing that. Check us out on Facebook, and we're also on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We've got one new follower this week, and that is at Omen Marketing. So thanks for the follow there, people.
Tyler, that doesn't sound like spam at all.
Okay, I was gonna say, have you done your diligence and checked to see?
No, like I went there and I was like, okay, this is spam, but it really isn't. So I didn't spam snipe him.
Okay.
The ones that are spam are when they have like 500 like this is when they just get started and they have like 500 followers but no, excuse me, they're following 500 people but have no followers and they link to the porn site.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I take care of. This guy, he's just trying to. He has like 15,000 followers, so
nice.
People are following him. And I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that we support his endeavors. I don't know anything about him. Sorry, dude. But that at least saves you from being sniped by the spam.
Yeah. And we'll check it out and see if it's
Yeah, legit. I don't know about that. I'm kind of our managerial marketing expert around here.
Okay, God forbid. All right. Well,
my business card.
I'll check it out then. So anyway, let's finish the character name game.
Sure.
See if you can pick this one out. So Tony Perkis was the name. Keep in mind that this has to have some sort of correlation to a movie that came out in wide release this past week. So do you have any idea what movie the character of Tony Perkis is from?
Yeah, is the movie? I guess the movie that came out this week that you're referencing is that it's not Harold and Kumar, is it?
It is not Harold and Kumar.
Okay, so it's got to be that other one that I can't really think of.
I'll give you a hint. It's Tower Heist.
Okay. Tony Perkis. Okay. Let me think of Matthew Broderick's character in Biloxi Blues.
That is incorrect. It's not Matthew Broderick.
Okay, Matthew Broderick's character.
No, it's not Matthew Broderick.
Oh, okay. Is it Eddie Murphy's character in... is it Ben Stiller's character in... Was his name Tony and something about Mary?
No. I think it was a little bit earlier than that in his career. This movie falls a little bit earlier than that.
All right. Maybe, Ben Stiller earlier than that?
Yeah.
Nikes. He wasn't in Jumanji, was he?
No, it's actually kind of another kids movie. I don't know if you've seen this one or not, but I really loved this movie growing up. So, I'll give you a hint. It's about
The Rocketeer.
It's about a camp.
Oh, that Fat Camp movie?
Yes, yeah.
Is that what it's called, Fat Camp?
No, it's actually called Heavyweights.
Oh, Heavyweights, that's right.
Have you ever seen that movie?
I've seen like the last 25 minutes of it.
Oh, okay. Man.
It was on like TV.
I loved that movie growing up. But yes, Tony Perkis, the character of Tony Perkis, is actually like a direct precursor to... the character of White Goodman from Dodgeball. It's basically the same exact guy. So
yeah.
If anybody who's listening to this maybe loves Dodgeball and has never seen Heavyweights, go and check that one out because it's really great. So I don't know if it's available on Netflix or anything. I'm too lazy to look that up right now. So anyway, Tyler, if you want to, let's go back and forth and just let people know where they can track us down this week on the internet. So we'll start with you.
Yeah, definitely. You can find me... Man, I'm pretty inactive right now. Let's say, just check back for those after midnights. I mean, that's the stuff I'm going to be working on the next couple weeks or so. All
right.
That and, the NJNM podcast Twitter feed.
If
that's anything you absorb. That's about it.
Cool. All right. Well, you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. You can find me and my coverage of the AFI Film Festival at geektyrant.com this week. My reviews at filmonic.com and notjustnewmovies.com. And you can hear me also on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of the BMX Bandits score. And
it's Yakety Sax backwards.
I might try to do that just for like the first 5 seconds just to see what it sounds like, but it's probably just going to be a cacophony of noise that is completely unlistenable. But
close the thesaurus, dude.
sorry. A little bit too verbose for you these days.
Again, verbose, really? All right.
Okay. All right. Well, let's end this.
If it's more than four letters, you forget about it.
All right. So as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching the Sean Connery vehicle Dragonheart.
I thought the dragon was the vehicle. Whatever.
So check that out, and we look forward to talking to you guys next week. Take care.
Bye.